It's really a pleasure to be here. I mean, that's both a privilege and an honor to be asked to speak at this conference in honor of Spencer. And the title of the conference is The Mathematical Heritage of Spencer Bloch. And I think this is perhaps rather ill-chosen in some sense, because when I think of heritage, I think of sort of, you know, old buildings with vines growing up them and things like that. And we all know that Spencer's mathematical work, although it dates back a long time, is going to carry on for energetically for many years to come. So personally, I'm very indebted to Spencer's work, to Spencer as well, and his work. And as Lichtenbaum already mentioned in his talk, some years ago, I did a small piece of work in reformulating some of these conjectures on special values of L functions in some sort of uniform framework, and I was very much inspired, I'd like to say, by Spencer's paper on Tamagawa numbers of abelian varieties in the Bochy-Hendaya conjecture, in which he sort of did part of the passage from special values of L functions to Tamagawa numbers of certain sort of mixed motives. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is, well, it's in some way related to special values of L functions, although they are probably unlikely to actually appear in the talk. I have to apologize that the subject I actually chose to talk about is perhaps a little bit old, but maybe it's sufficiently old that those of you who have heard this talk before I've completely forgotten what it's about, and if I work hard enough I can disguise the material sufficiently so that you don't recognize it. You recognize it. Okay, so since this is a conference on motives and cycles, not a conference on number theory, going to make different assumptions for the audience that I guess I would do a number theory talk and try and at least have some motives somewhere in the talk. So let me start off by reviewing just some this very classical theory of the simplest possible Eisenstein theory. But maybe I'm going to start off by just writing some names on the blackboard. So I will write Spencer here because it's his birthday. And because he was one of the people who really started the this stuff on special values of L functions. And then specifically what I'm going to talk about is very closely related to an outgrowth in some sense of the work of Kazuya-Kato on the Bochy-Hendaya conjecture and the main conjecture for the thermal groups associated to modular forms. Which itself is closely related also to the early work by Baylinson well, 20 years ago now, I guess, on the special values of L functions and modular curves. So these are the sort of three things. This is the area this is going to sort of cover. We've got like classical Eisenstein theory. So this is real 19th century stuff. So on, we just take I'm just going to try and be a bit vague just to be on the safe side, but we'll take some integer n and some. And what is an Eisenstein theory? So an Eisenstein theory, you start off with something like this. Traditionally, you start off with some series like this, with something on the top, maybe one on the top, and the very simplest one, you just sum over all non-zero pairs of integers, n1 and n2, but if you want to do this with some level, you pick some pair of integers mod n, and you choose this thing to be in a particular congruence class, modulo n, and you have this series, so I'll call this series, I don't know, E There can be an awful lot of E's in this chalk. Maybe I should have called my Eisenstein series G instead. And I'm going to normalize these things as well, just by them, just so that what I say has vaguely some truth in it by dividing by 2 pi I to the k, which has the effect of making things a bit more rational. So these are a priori defined for integers k greater than or equal to 3. And then there's a standard trick by doing analytic continuation to cover the cases k equals 1 and 2. There are various subtleties involved in that, which people who know all about this know all about, and people who don't know about it don't want to know about. So one has this Eisenstein series, which is a modular form, a holomorphic modular form of weight k on the modular subgroup gamma n, principal congruent subgroup of matrices congruent to the identity modulo n inside SL2Z. And so we need some notation for this space, I guess. So we'll call it the space. So we have this E, Ka, which is in the space of modular forms, level, let's just put N here for the moment. And if I normalize this incorrectly, we can actually expand this guy as some power series in a variable Q to the 1 over capital N, so where Q is e to the 2 pi I tor. Tor is being in the upper half plane, of course, and if I've done this correctly, these things should actually be cyclotomic numbers, so these have coefficients in Q Zn, and if I put the power of 2 pi I wrong, please don't tell me. But I think that's right. And it's been known for rather a long time that if you want to have these, have the integrality properties for good integrality properties, it's best to modify these a bit. This is a sort of standard thing that one does in number theory, all kinds of things. And so you replace this by some, I think this is now Carter's notation for this one, so we just modify this by taking some auxiliary integer C. So C will be some positive integer, C will be prime to n, and it's convenient to have C prime to 6 as well. And then we take this, and then I think this is the correct thing to do again. C to the k, ek, and now it's prime to n, so we can multiply this thing by 1 over C. And under reasonable conditions, this even has coefficients in which are actually algebraic integers, for which perhaps I have to assume, I never remember exactly, but certainly if we assume that n is divisible by at least 2 primes, then I'm sure that that's fine. Or some condition like that. So since this is supposed to be a conference on motives, I have to immediately use the M word. And actually one curious thing is that I really don't know, and I've never seen any really nice connection between the first case, which is a look at modular forms of weight 1, what these things have to do with motives at all. In what sense can you sort of say anything motivic about Eisenstein series of weight 1? And I have no idea what the answer to that thing is, because if you talk to somebody in automorphic forms, they will tell you, these Eisenstein series, they're weight 1 forms, and they're not cohomological, and so they've got nothing to do with motives, so you should just forget about them. But of course, number theorists don't like to forget about things just for that reason. It's an interesting problem to see whether there is some sort of motivic interpretation of these. So if it falls away too, there certainly is a very simple motivic interpretation, which is very well known to people who work in this area. It's been known for a long time, is that these are, so let's introduce the modular curve. So let's take xn. For the moment, we'll just use this as some curve over the complex numbers. So we just take yn, which is the upper half plane, modulo the subgroup gamma n, and together with the finite number of cusps that we need to compactify it to make a smooth projective curve. And then the space with modular forms of weight 2, say with complex coefficients, is just the h naught of xn with of omega 1 with log poles along the cusps. And one very nice fact that comes out of the rationality properties of these things is that the Eisenstein series, so we've got some Eisenstein series inside here, and they form a complement to the space of cusp forms, which is just the h naught of omega without the poles, and that as well as providing a splitting of this, it actually gives a splitting of the mixed Hodge structure of the h1 of this curve. So it gives a rational splitting, I should say, of the extension of mixed Hodge structures. So we take the h1 of the compact curve into the h1 of the open curve into the, well, sorry, it's not a very straight line for this. So q1 to the sum, well, it's the number of cusps minus 1. So there's this extension of mixed Hodge structures, which is split, and the reason that it's split is that the as was proved by Lanin and Grinfeld a very long time ago, the difference between any two cusps on this curve is a divisor of finite order, and so you can write down a function which has lots of functions which have divisors supported on the cusps, and then if you take the logarithmic derivative of that, that gives you a logarithmic one form whose basically zonally periods around the points that you around the cusps, and gives a splitting of this mixed Hodge structure. So in sort of the modular terms, so I mean I could write z1 here actually, I like to do that, although the splitting itself is actually is rational. So we have some sort of splitting here. So splitting here, so from the motivic point of view, corresponds to an element of h1, yn, motivic with coefficients in z1, which are just units on the curve yn. And these things have been known for a very long time. And in fact, there are a particular sort of some particular units I want to just remind you that exist. So there are certain, I'll call them, let's write, give them a notation here. So that we have some units. So they depend on parameters, and they're the same parameters that we have up here. There are certain sort of canonical or explicit, let's say. That's rather, so we have explicit units here, which were studied by Kubert and Lang, and they called them Ziegel units, and then they were studied very algebraically in a very nice way by Kato, so I will call them Kato-Ziegel units. And they have the property, basically, that the space of all the weight two Eisenstein series is just the span, the rational span, of these the logarithmic derivatives of these Ziegle units. And these are, in fact, defined over the constant mu naught, and the constant phi we'll take as being the cyclotomic field, and these we have an equality like this. Okay, so these are all completely standard facts. Now, the purpose of the talk is somehow to generalize the following rather strange congruence. So it's a sort of exotic congruence which plays an important part in Carter's work on BSD, which relates these logarithmic derivatives, which are some weight two forms, and weight one forms, these non-motivic, apparently, things here. And perhaps let me just explain this in the simplest way, is if I choose a prime P dividing N, and then I take this unit here, and now I look at it, it has some expansion as a Q series. So in fact, again under some suitable hypotheses, it will have, well, let's take P adic coefficients here. So we fix our some prime P, and with a Laurent series with values over Q to the 1 over N. So let's call this ring something Rn. So now, here, what we're doing is we're just taking the logarithmic derivative of this over the constant ring here. But what one can actually do is take the logarithmic derivative of this over Zp. Now, the difference here is that there are non-trivial differentials of Zp zeta n over Zp. There's a sort of torsion module there. So we can form the following thing. Let's write it down here. We can form, let's write it like this. So to emphasize that the D is relative to a Zp of log, so like of log GCA. So what is this? This is some absolute differential Rn, well, this is it should be something like separated, p-adically separated or something like this. So rather than just define this, let's just sort of say explicitly what it is. So on the one hand, we have a derivative of q to the 1 over n to contend with, and then the other thing we have to contend with is the derivative of this zeta n. Now the zeta n derivative, because the power of n of zeta n is 1, this is clearly going to be torsion, and it says killed by some ideal In, which is basically just generated by the different of the cyclotomic field over Q. So it's some, and this isn't just some power of the prime lying over P. Well, or maybe there are several primes lying over P, let's not worry about that. So one has this guy here, so this is a sort of refined logarithmic derivative. And then the curious congruence is that this logarithmic derivative of this GCA is congruent modulo n to actually this other thing, which is the logarithm, to this Eisenstein series of weight 1, CE 1a times, and now you get a1 d log q to the 1 of n plus, let's make this a bit bigger here, pass A2, D log Zeta N. Okay, so this congruence, which is between, on the one hand, something which is sort of weight 2 here, and here we have something which is weight 1, and so that's why I call it an exotic congruence, is because congruences like that are only sort of supposed to exist when the weights differ by some power of something which is divisible by a power of p. So these are sort of strange. There are some examples of such exotic congruences of different kinds, which occur in the Katz-Mazur study of the arithmetic of moduli of curve. But this, I always thought when I first saw this that it was a very peculiar thing. Maybe I should just mention now that with the importance of this in Katz's work is that if you then take the cut product of these two things, which is now, let's take, say, some GA and some GB, and maybe we should take a different C, a C and a C prime here, which is now something in the K2 of this modular curve. And if we take D log of this, again, over ZP, so that's now a two-form. And so two forms, so in this sort of two-dimensional ring, we've just got a Q and a zeta n. So this then is equal to the product of the corresponding Eisenstein series, E1b, times a number, which is just a pairing between A and B, which is just actually it's just the cross product there, and times d log of q to the 1 over n wedge d log of zeta. So that's the and that's the important fact that is from which Cato's beautiful theorem followed. Well, you know, that's certainly an important ingredient. So I want to explain this and sort of generalize it in some sense. And to do that, well, I suppose I should just recall. No, I'm not quite sure what to do with these here. This reminds me of the toy that I used to have when I was a child. It had a sort of box with things that you could slide across, and you could put things in, and then slide things backwards and forth, and magically they disappear. So maybe I should do the same thing here, and magically the right things will appear at the right time in the talk. But I think that's somehow that's unlikely to happen. So let's just leave that where it is for the moment. Okay, so I just want to just briefly review what the algebraic theory of modular forms, just to make the link between the formulae that I wrote down before and what is going to come. So this was developed by Katz in the 70s, and so we have a modular form F, let's say, of weight K. One should think of that as being a in fancy terms, a section of an appropriate line bundle on the stack of modular curves, but that's a bit more simply a rule which associates to an elliptic curve over base here something here which is a section of the kth power of this standard sheaf omega. So omega is supposed to be here the cotangent bundle at a zero section, or so whichever you prefer. So then these are supposed to have, which is supposed to be compatible with base change. And there's also a rather important condition, which is that these things have to be holomorphic at infinity. So you can think of that in two ways. So one point of view is you think of this thing and you evaluate this on the Tay curve. So the Tay curve, so this already occurred in a Wayne Atkins lecture, which is the curve which sort of ridged analytically is GM modulo Q to the Z, is a curve in fact over Z double round brackets Q. So the condition that your modular form is holomorphic infinity is that this should actually have no negative powers of Q when we expand it around the sort of the standard invariant form on GN, which descends to a section of the omega here. Or another way of putting it, so we have that's one way, or is that you just expand your class of elliptic curves to include, so you allow generalized elliptic curves, so that means you allow a rather carefully chosen sort of degeneracies of your elliptic curves. I'll say a little mess here. And which basically gives you the same thing because the Tay curve extends to a curve over this ring. So we have the standard degeneration of the Tay curve, which is this sort of narrow n-sided polygon. And if you allow things like that in your definition of elliptic curves, you have to be a little bit careful, especially when we come to looking at level structures, what you do there, but that also is another way of seeing that, though this approach doesn't seem to be terribly fashionable these days. And of course what I've written here are just modular forms of level 1, but then we can also have a level structure, so we can have level n structure, means we consider not just E over S, but E over S together with some trivialization in some sense of the n torsion points. Well, let's write it this way here. So we have n squared sections. And there's also, we might have something which is called gamma 1 n structure, which is where you just have basically one point of order n, and let's just write, so we have some section x in E of S, which is everywhere of order n. And then there is a standard way of making sense of this even when n is not invertible on S, which is by using these Drinfeld level structures, and this was all worked out a long time ago in the book by Katz and Mazur, where all these things are studied. So from this point of view, then the Eisenstein series then have the following a nice description. So the Eisenstein series is, we know that what we want to do is take E to be this curve, and now they depend on some parameter A. Well, it's still up there, great. The parameter A, and so we have a sort of point here, which is A1 tor plus A2 over N, and I guess I'm going to assume that these are, it has exact order n, and so then what we want to do is we want to define something, let's call it I's and k of e s x, and since I have the c, I will put that in there too. So the algebraic definition of this thing is the following. So we just take basically any function fc on the elliptic curve with divisor c squared times 0 minus the kernel of multiplication by c. And such a thing exists locally on S anyway, that's for sure. In fact, more is true. It exists locally on S anyway, because the fibers, I guess I'm assuming that S is some reduced scheme, but one can do that by reduction to some, since there are no obstructions, so we're dealing with elliptic curves. So, so then one takes this thing, one takes its logarithmic derivative. So the logarithmic derivative, I need some space there, of this, of e of s, of this guy, the logarithmic derivative of fc, so the logarithmic derivative itself is in the section on e minus the torsion points of, of the sheaf, the pullback of the sheaf little omega, because big omega is just the pullback by f of little omega, and so we can differentiate this again. So I put d to the k of here, up here, and just putting a k up there, just because the cotangent bundle, relative cotangent bundle, is trivial on the fibers, and so we can do that, and then we get something here to the k, and then pull this back via x, because c is prime to n, x and c are not supposed to meet. And x and the kernel of multiplication by c don't meet, and so we get that, which is indeed our section on s. Well, omega tensor k, and that gives a satisfactory definition of the Einstein series. Now, in fact, and this is a maybe it's fine, we'll leave that. So in fact, there exists a canonical choice. Of such a function fc, which is in fact global, because it's these things glued together, which I think were originally discovered by Ziegler, in some sense, just by formulae. So they were given in terms of Peter functions, so he chose them in some very nice way, and then Carter gave a very nice, completely algebraic description of this, characterizing them by the distribution properties that other people had already shown existed. So we have a characterization by the distribution property, which is that if we take fc and then we take the norm of it with respect to multiplication by d, where d is prime to c, then we get some function which has got the same divisor, and in fact the function is actually equal to fc. That's a very beautiful and really quite strange characterization of these canonical functions. So, and then for this choice, then I'll tell you, just to complete the picture, that this GC is just the D log on the modular curve on YN of the pullback of fc by the section x, if x corresponds to the point, is the point given by the pair a1, a2. So then that gives some reasonable explanation why such a thing might be true, and one can just compute right down the Fourier expansions of both sides and just check that they are, it's sort of completely elementary to check then to check this congruence. Which I suppose is some sort of explanation for it. Okay, so now what I want to do is to explain the generalization. And the generalization will be to the case when we look at forms of weight greater than 2. Okay, so if the form's weight greater than 2, then what one knows is one has an analogous thing, which is the Eisenstein series of weight k, then. These set of such things then splits another mixed Hodge structure, so it splits the mixed Hodge structure of Eichler-Shimura cohomology. So if we write, let's write k equals l plus 2, greater than 2, then, and we take our universal elliptic curve on yn, and then we take j, the inclusion, into here, then, we have this extension let's do this with q coefficients for the moment. So if we take j lower star of the sim L of R1 f lower star of q, we are just call this thing VL, this sheaf here, and that maps to the H1 the open guy with coefficients in VL, and then this maps to a direct sum over the cusps of Q minus L. Minus 1 to 0 is this is an extension of a mixed Hodge structures that comes out of the Eichler-Shimura cohomology theory. And then there's the next thing I have to recall. So it's sort of embarrassing that I'm spending a long time just talking about things that are very, very old, but they're still very beautiful pieces of mathematics, is that Valensen constructed a long time ago this thing he called the Eisenstein symbol, which is perhaps best thought of. So what it is, it's a splitting of the extension of motives of which this thing is has this Betti realization, this Eichler-Shimura cohomology. So I need to actually explain this in a little bit of detail. So suppose we take EL to be just the fiber product, L times of this over the YN, and we take some nice compactification of it, then this extension of mixed motives is just the following. So an extension of, now here I had some problem in actually deciding what sort of notation to use, so I'll try and sort of use some old-fashioned notation. So I'll write H, which is supposed to be the motive of this, in a sort of abelian category of motives, and this is a sort of primitive part of this, so let's just write primitive part, and I'll explain in a moment what that is. And then we have the open thing, again, the primitive part of that. And then that maps to Well, some over cusps. Now, I like to write z here, and it's a little bit of a problem with doing that, but let's just write z prime. So I'm rather anxious to try and preserve the denominators as much as possible, and so z prime is going to be z join 1 over 2 times L factorial, although it's a slight cheat, but you'll see why in a moment. And now this primitive thing here is, to explain what that is, and then I have to introduce a finite group acting on this. So we have a finite group of automorphisms on here. Well, this automorphism group in the fibers certainly contains GLL of Z, because we have Z acting on the fibers, the anthropomorphism, so GLL acts there. And so inside here we have a group which can be described in various ways. It's the group generated by permutations and by diagonals with plus or minus ones in them, or just matrices whose entries are plus or minus one occurring in exactly one row and column. It's just an orthogonal group of the L cube or something like that. And we can enlarge this group to by adding as well, we have translations here. So we can say, let's give this a name. Let's call that gamma L. And let's call gamma LN the group generated by this guy and generated by the translations by the sections of finite order, of which there are now two, n to the 2L of those. So we have this group. So this sits inside the automorphism group, and if we choose our model correctly, it actually sits inside the automorphism group of this compactification. Okay, now the primitive just means we take an eigenspace for an action of one of these groups. So we have a character here, plus or minus 1, and the character, let's call it here epsilon, and maybe I'll call it epsilon n here, and the character is just the determinant on GLL, which is just the sign here, and just minus 1 in each of these minus 1s, times the trivial character on z mod n to the 2L. So we have this this finite group of automorphisms, and let's see what we can get rid of now. Maybe I can go here. And then this primitive part, so what I call the primitive part, is just we take this motive and we tensor it with, well, in this case, we're going to have to tensor it with z 1 over n times 2n times L factorial. And then we take the part on which the group acts by the character epsilon n, and if we do the same thing without that, we just take z prime and we just use the character epsilon. Now, so it's just some part of here. Now, the reason we have to use this n is because I'm sort of being a bit old-fashioned in that I like to have motives which are motives of projected smooth varieties. So this motive here, which is the sort of pure motive, associated modular forms, is a sub-motive of a motive of a projective variety. But if one were to change this and replace and you have to have this this group here to kill off some of the things that come from the compactification infinity. But if you were happy not to have something that was projective, he could somehow get rid of the N, which is why I sort of ignored it on the right-hand side there. And it's kind of important that you can ignore it as well. Okay, so that's the definition of these things. And now, the splitting of this sequence, so we have a rational splitting, which is given by this Eisenstein symbol, and now, if I have time, I seem to be running out of time, I just want to very quickly review how this goes, and then I can state the congruence, and then maybe that's going to be more or less it. So, to split this this extension, so this is the extension of motives, this one here, so that's sort of equivalent to constructing elements now of HL plus 1 of EL with coefficients in, well, ideally in Z prime L plus 1, which transform under this character epsilon, which is exactly what Baylinson did in constructing this this Eisenstein symbol. And a variant of his construction goes as follows, which fits in with this picture. So we consider various maps here, H naught up to HL to E, which are given by, so we've got a point P1 up to PL here. So that means we've got L plus one of them, so let's write L plus one, so I can write the equation in one go. So there's this map, so if I take minus P1, P1 minus P2, P2 minus P3, this is sort of wrong in some ways, but it does somehow give the right answer. PL minus 1 minus PL, and then PL at the end, so the sum of the coefficients is 1. So we take this map here, and now the basically the construction then is the following. You take the function fc, and we translate it by x. So we've now got a function on E which has divisor in the n times c torsion. And now we pull it back via this map h0, and then we take the cut product with the same thing, but now without the x, for all the other ones. HL fc dot fc. So we have some cut product here, and now this cut product has singularities along a certain divisor, which I might call DLNC, which is the inverse image under multiplication by NC of a divisor DL inside here, and DL, so this contains a divisor DL, which is just the place where one of these point coordinates is zero, or some difference or sum, pi plus or minus j, is zero. So this is some divisor inside your thing, which sort of in two dimensions looks like, you know, two coordinate axes and the two diagonal and the anti-diagonal, and it's a lot more complicated in general. And this divisor and these maps are chosen, so they're preserved by this group here. So now if we take the direct image with respect to multiplication by NC, then well, that gets rid of the NC here, so we've now got just by DL, so I could get rid of that. And now we take the part of this which transforms under epsilon in this character. And now the nice miracle is that this is actually the restriction of an element of the motive cohomology of EL. So this thing actually belongs to HL plus 1 of EL, the coefficients in with exactly these denominators, and that's the definition of something. I should give a name to this. Now, this is not very good use of Blackboard. I's M. Maybe I'll just write L here. Not trying to write too much to fit in the space, sorry, this is quite awful. Okay, then the theorem that Bailenson proved about this is that, well, a particular version of this is we take the d log of this motivic Eisenstein symbol. It is, and let's not be too precise about it, it is a weight L plus 2 Eisenstein series. And we can say exactly which one it is. So the exotic congruence is then one can now sort of guess what this has to be, and it's now that instead of taking the d log of this over the just geometrically, if we take the d log of this. So again, we can take some take this over say over ZP, where we have some prime P dividing N, and we can take the D log of this I's L M, and so now where is this going to live here? So we restrict this to the so we take this thing here, and it depends. This is going to depend on some parameter A, and we restrict this to the Tate curve. And so what we get is something inside a. Well, we have this ring Rn, and then. So we're taking d log of an L plus 1 fold symbol there. So. Basically, we can get this. We can get L copies of dt over t times dq to the 1 of n. And we can also get the possibility, the same thing here. We get another chunk. Now, when you look at this, you may think, well, aren't there some other differential forms you could get in which you get dt to the L minus 1 or something like that, but because there's epsilon, that doesn't happen. So basically we just get this. So T is the parameter on the Tate curve. So this is GM modulo Q to the Z, and so we have the standard differential dt of a T. And now what's going on here is that we're taking a D log, so perhaps I should just spell it out a bit because it's kind of confusing if I don't. So if we take d log of this guy, so this is now an h0 in this EL, an omega L plus 1 of EL over ZP now. Well, I've done a base change, but anyway. And with this, taking this epsilon part. And because this epsilon acts in fibers, it acts by minus 1 in each fiber, and we have the symmetric group, this is sort of easy to see that this is just h naught of y, the modular curve, with coefficients in omega to the L, tensored with omega 1 of yn, over ZP. So we have our dt to the L as the basis of this in the neighborhood of a cusp, and here we have two generators, this one and this one. And then the congruence is that this is then congruent, well, in fact, is equal to, is congruent to. Um, Well, let's just say, and then I'm going to say in a moment what it is, but not write it down. A certain Eisenstein series of weight L plus 1. And then we have, again, we have this A1 D log Q1 of N plus A2 D log zeta N. Occurring there. So I have, I guess, only 3 minutes left. So okay. So that is the main result. But I have to tell you what this Eisenstein series is. I can only get some sketch what that is. So somehow this is obtained. You sort of it's done by so we sort of apply the same construction but instead of taking these SCs we use d log of SC instead. Now, when you first look at this, it seems a kind of stupid thing to do because you've got the wrong number of differentials here to sort of make this any sense. But if you fill around with it a bit, you find that there's a certain way to write down a modular form by doing the same thing, doing this sort of averaging argument, and there's a different argument that's required to show that it extends to the whole thing. And the argument for k equals, well, for weight 1 is it breaks down in that case, but that's all right because that's already dealt with. And then one can actually identify this. So we can then identify this as one of the other Eisenstein series. Well, it has to be some, well, it's a sum of such things, a sum of some other Eisenstein series of weight L plus 1 for some of parameters at A prime with some coefficients, and this linear combination is given by some Fourier transform on the parameter. One can do this very explicitly by taking this Eisenstein series and just computing its value at the cusps, which is perhaps a little bit painful, but it can be done. So it's sort of the second part is that one actually identifies this. And so in the remaining 30 seconds, I will just write some names and say a couple of things. So first of all, one, the reason for doing this in the first place is because the reason is the cut products of such things, such as these E, say with some L, and then with some L prime, let's say, these have relations with Carter's work, I think at the same time I shall write down two other names, so there's student of Fla called Geely, who used some similar things related to the Tamagawa number conjecture, so the Boccato conjecture, Boccato special values conjecture, and now a student of Kato, whose name I think is pronounced Jiang. We had some discussion about this beforehand, and. Also, but the reason I really wanted to do this was because one can now take, at least in some cases, so let's just write down one case where we take one of these things and we take the cut product with the Eisenstein series for the parameter L equals 0. So this is just a Ziegle modular form. So this is now in HL plus 2 motivic of this EL. Weight L plus I've written one, I meant two, yeah. And now, one can then, these are sort of form a norm-compatible system as one multiplies n by a power of p, and then there's a, one applies this machinery of p-adic representations to apply an Arbol-Jacobi map, and then a dual exponential map, which reduces this thing to a space of forms, of weight, modular forms of weight L plus 1 on, say, let's say on n with coefficients in qp zeta n or something like that. And then, in order to compute the image of this, the most obvious way is to write down an appropriate explicit reciprocity law for such elements. And so in this case, one uses an explicit reciprocity law, which has been proved very recently by a former student of mine, who is here, Hanna Harkonnen. And then one can show that the, using this congruence, that the image of this is given by, under here, given by the product of a weight L plus 1 Eisenstein series and a weight 1 Eisenstein series with suitable parameters and constants. But this congruence here is required to fill in the remaining parts of the long diagram, which I had no time to put on the blackboard. Okay, well, that I think is time for me to stop. The simple answer is no. I think maybe you can tell me that.
Well, I compute examples, and so I have an example, and you mentioned the Eisenstein.
You mean factor, you mean as a product, of literally, assuming you can take this times as. There are these very strange cases in which you have certain. I mean, no, on the question of explicit examples, where you have sort of certain modular forms, which are given as eigen functions of Hecker operators, which have a certain strange product decomposition or a very nice expression in terms of Eisenstein series or in terms of eta functions, for no apparent reason, except they just happen to be, and they look very beautiful. But I never knew of any explanation of such things. Earlier in my career, I spent a long time computing such things, and I found lots of very nice expressions for eigenforms, and very symmetric expressions involving Eisenstein series and eta functions. But I could never find any rhyme or reason for why they work.